Sodanandana Prajajanaranjana. Vasodanandana Prajajanaranjana. Amunatira Panachari. Munatira Panachari. Jaya Radha Madhava. Jaya Kuncha Bihari. Thank you. Danandana Prajajanaranjana. Yasodanandana Prajajanaranjana. Amunatira Panachari. Amunatira Panachari. Radha Madhava Kuncha Bihari. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada. Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing the chapter entitled Krishna Chastises the Serpent Kaliya. Let's check if this is on. Yes, okay. We are doing text 12 together, and I'll be reading text 13 through 15. So text 12. Atavraje mahotpatas trividhai ati darunaha utpetur bhavi diviatmani asana baya samsinaha. Atavraje mahotpatas trividhahi ati darunaha utpetur bhuvi diviatmani Asana Baya Samsinaham Atavraje Mahodpatas Trividhahi Atitarunaha Utpetur Bhuvi Diviatmani Asana Baya Samsinaha. Please chant. Atavraje Mahodpatas Trividhahi Atitarunaha Utpetur Bhuvi Diviatmani Asana Baya Samsinaha Atavraje Mahodpatas Trividhahi Atitarunaha Utpetur Bhuvi Diviatmani Asana Baya Samsinaha Atavraje Mahopatas Trividhahi Atitarunaha Utpetur Bhuvi Diviatmani Asana Baya Samsinaha Atavraje Mahopatas Trividhahi Atitarunaha Utpetur Bhuvi Diviatmani Atana Maya Samsinaha. Atavraje Mahopatas Trividhahi Atitarunaha Utpetur Bhuvi Diviatmani Asana Baya Samsinaha. Okay, the word for word translation. Ata, then, Vraje, in Vrindavan. Maha Utpataha, very ominous disturbances. Trividha, of the three varieties. He, indeed. Atarunaha, most fearsome. Utpetu, arose. Uvi, upon the earth. Divi, in the sky. Atmani, in the bodies of living creatures. Asana, imminent. Baya, danger. Samsinaha, announcing. So the translation for text 12. In the Vrindavan area, there then arose all three types of fearful omens, those on the earth, those in the sky, and those in the bodies of living creatures, which announced imminent danger. Purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, the omens were as follows. On the earth, there were disturbing tremors. In the sky, there were meteors falling. And in the bodies of creatures, there was shivering, as well as quivering of the left eye and other parts of the body. These omens announce imminent danger. And text 13 through 15. Tana Lakshya Bayodna Gopinanda Puro Gamaha Vinaramena Ga Krishnam Natva Charitum Gatam Tai Duni Mitai Nitanam Matva Praptam Atad Vidaha Tat Pranas Tan Manas Kaste Dukha Shoka Bayaturaha Abala Vrita Vanitaha Sarvenga Pashu Vritayaha Mirjagnu Gokula Dinaha Krishna Dashana Lalakshaha. And the translation for texts 13 through 15. Seeing the inauspicious omens, Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men were fearful, for they knew that Krishna had gone to herd the cows that day without his elder brother Balaram. Because they had dedicated their minds to Krishna, accepting him as their very life, they were unaware of his great power and opulence. Thus, they concluded that the inauspicious omens indicated he had met with death, and they were overwhelmed with grief, lamentation, and fear. All the inhabitants of Vrindavan, including the children, women, and elderly persons, thought of Krishna just as a cow thinks of her helpless young calf, and thus these poor, suffering people rushed out of the village, intent upon finding him. Om Gyana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militamyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopistam Stapitamyena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Sham Shri Rupa Sakrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishaka Vitamscha. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapsa Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavanishvari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha kalpataribhya cha kripa sindhubhya eva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnebhyo namo namaha. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimataram Padaswami Tinamine Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimata Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschacha Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. When I was looking at these verses, a particular idea started developing, and beginning with that idea, I wanted to just note that one has to make a distinction between two kinds of worship. There's antaranga, or internal worship, and there's bahiranga, which is external worship. So external worship, this usually arises from prayer, hymns, gratitude, and duty. And it's usually controlled by some sort of speculation. And in external worship, one simply knows that God is all-powerful and that everyone should worship him. Recently, Subal and I visited one of the, it's called one of the wonders, I guess, of Chicago. as you have the seven wonders of the world. In Chicago, I don't know the exact number, but something below 10. And one of them is the, Bihai Temple. So this particular temple it took about 50 years to construct, and the exterior of the building has concrete in intricate lace detail. So it's very unusual to see concrete being done in a lace detail. And there's extensive landscape grounds. But when you start walking up to the temple, up the stairs, you get the sense that the structure is extremely imposing. And and then when you walk in, there's a lot of rows of seats. There's nothing central in the temple building, maybe two vases of flowers. So this is that kind of, worship, where one knows that God is all-powerful and that everyone should worship him. But there isn't any visual of God or the pastimes of God as one finds in internal worship. So the internal worship, so you could say that the external worship isn't quite sufficient. It's touching on an external part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So actually internal worship, on the other hand, it produces activities that come out of an indescribable, confidential attraction of the soul. And this definition of internal worship, it comes from Prema Pradipa of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Now, there's a particular line of division when spiritual vision develops, meaning one is able to see. It's like crossing that line between the external and the internal worship. And that line that gets crossed is one where one is able to see that the spirit soul, just being in contact with material nature, that's the reason it's getting bodies. And at the same time, so this is that moment when one actually is crossing the line into internal worship. One suddenly isn't differentiating any longer between the different kinds of bodies. One isn't seeing, oh, man, animal, big, low, form of life, etc. Merely one's consciousness is so purified that one is able to start to develop Krishna consciousness, this internal worship. So Krishna puts it this way. He explains something of this moment when there's this shift. This is coming from Bhagavad Gita 13:31. Krishna puts it this way. When a sensible man ceases to see different identities due to different material bodies, and he sees how beings are expanded everywhere, he attains to the Brahman conception. And if you go even further and proceed in Krishna consciousness, one starts to actually get absorbed in prema or love for the Supreme Lord. That's when some internal knowledge also arises. Because, you know, the comment was that it's not really sufficient, that external worship. It's there's duty, there's gratitude, there's some sense of greatness, yes, must worship, but it hasn't gone further. So going further, just through getting this, crossing this line and getting this understanding that you don't even have to look at the different bodies. There's the existence of the soul. And gradually proceeding along the path and developing love, a very kind of confidential love for the Supreme Lord, that's when knowledge starts arising. So it's not, no longer is it that one kind of just externally sings something in praise of the Lord, but literally one is connected to the Supreme Lord. So, and you know, in the next verse, that particular verse that I read of Srimad, of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, those with the vision of eternity can see that the imperishable soul is transcendental, eternal, and beyond the modes of nature. Despite contact with the material body, O Arjuna, the soul neither does anything nor is entangled. So there's a completely separate existence to the bodily existence. So this is going beyond that, you know, awesome view of God. So this vision is there, or when the spiritual vision is developing, there's five tastes that arise according to the particular and now adequate relationship with the Supreme Lord. And the one that's coming up in these particular verses that we're reading is the fifth taste, and it's the highest taste, the most confidential, the closest, intimate relationship with the Supreme Lord. That's the taste of Madhurya Ras. It means that the strength of faith has increased so much that the Lord and the devotee are actually one in heart and soul. So it's no longer just very external, like I keep visualizing this building, it just says everything. It's no longer external, it's so much and so close that the heart and the soul of the entity is bound up with the heart and soul of Krishna. There's this description here, and this it bears this out. This is coming from Srila Svanatha Goswami. So I'm quoting. You climbed a tall kadamba tree and sported in the serpent's leg. You made Kaliya furious at you and became entangled in the coils of that angered serpent. So this is just the setting, and then the description continues. So one starts to get an understanding of the Lord and the devotee being one in heart and soul. So here's the description continuing. As your dear friend sank into bewilderment, the cows watched you with tearful eyes, alarmed. At fearful omens, everyone in Vraja set out to find where you had gone. I offer you my worship. So this is Srila Sanatana Goswami. Notice the nature of the worship. It's so intimate. It's actually seeing what Krishna is doing. It's actually, the worship is so great that even there's the ability to see how the residents, the cows, are feeling and how they're functioning in relation to Krishna. And there's a listing of these expressions of love for Krishna, which comes in Nectar of Devotion. And interesting, apprehension is mentioned as an expression of devotion. So, now, the definition of apprehension is that the heart becomes disturbed. For example, and this is how Nectar of Devotion, the example Nectar of Devotion gives of this apprehension, this spiritual apprehension. So the heart becomes disturbed. The example is given when one sees a very ferocious animal, or and it shows itself, because the body becomes stunned, like it can't move. And this is actually the case with the cows. You know, they've seen, you could say, ferocious serpent, and so they become completely stunned. They're not moving. Even though they may want to shed tears, the tears remain in the eyes. They don't move. So I can't function. So, and here's the description. So I'm quoting, the cows, bulls, and female calves in great distress called out piteously to Krishna. Fixing their eyes on him, they stood still in fear, as if ready to cry, but too shocked to shed tears. So, this is, remember, ecstatic. It's actually a visible external sign that indicates that when in the heart there's great ecstatic love for Krishna. So seeing the danger, this apprehension, this spiritual apprehension arises, and it's visible in the cows. So this was an earlier verse, the 11th verse, which gives that description of their condition. Now, one can make a distinction between being actually afraid and being ecstatically apprehensive. So it's, you notice there's a distinction. In the former case, being afraid, one can still think of the past and the future. And in the latter case, meaning the spiritual apprehension, there's no scope for any thinking. So it's very interesting. The mind is shut down. Well, the mind, well, everything shuts down. So I'm trying to think of a common situation of fear. Well, it's one of my favorite examples. One time in visiting a national game park in the country of my origin in Africa, there was a huge lion walking towards the car that we were seated in. And clearly the lion was a wild creature. You could see the eyes were not focused. It was wild. And it seemed to be eyeing the car, you know, in some sort, or there was a sense that there was some purpose to the movement. So the first thought was, is the window closed or not? And and in that moment, one, you know, is thinking. One's thinking, what is the course of action one's going to take? And so that's different from the apprehension that's been described here. You know, seeing Krishna in the coils of the Kaliya serpent, these cows, calves, the female little calves, the cows and the bulls, they all actually were even too shocked to shed a tear. So no functioning, no thought. Yes, I will add that later on I did hear from the game warden because I asked. I asked about the condition of the lion. That there seemed to be some, you know, agitation on the part of the lion. And I heard that, yes, that according to their monitoring, the last time that creature had eaten was 1 month ago. So it's nature arranges that lions can only eat once a month. So it was the time for that creature's meal, actually. So, well, I was certainly thinking. So we read here in text 13 through 15, and I'm reading the translation. Because they had dedicated their minds to Krishna, accepting him as their very life, they were unaware of his great power and opulence. Thus, they concluded that the inauspicious omens indicated he had met with death, and they were overwhelmed with grief, lamentation, and fear. Now, this is very interesting. The usual definition of lamentation, one has some sort of regret that one hasn't been able to achieve one's goal, or one isn't finding fulfillment in one's occupation, or one is even finding oneself feeling very guilty So there's, you know, lamentation, you know, one's unhappy about, you know, feeling ongoing guilt about some errors that were performed, or, you know, one's bemoaning the fact that one can't find happiness in one's occupation. Now, in the spiritual condition, something different happens. One becomes very thoughtful. And there may be some regretfulness, and one's breathing may be heavy, but one's very thoughtful. And one starts to question things. So, you know, the intelligence is working. So it's not stuck in some sort of ignorance, as may happen with regular lamentation. Rather, it's there's great thoughtfulness. And the description is, this is on the spiritual plane, the body color changes and the mouth becomes dry. And their thoughtfulness in this situation was that they recalled that Krishna had gone to herd the cows, but he had done so without Balaram. So they were beginning to think about the situation. So first there's the omens. So they're thinking carefully, and they perceive all these omens. This is Nanda Maharaj and the gopis. And they understood that some devastating time had assailed the earth. So they took it that the entire earth was actually coming to some sort of devastation. And there was overall this very hostile, unfavorable environment or atmosphere. So what happens? Their hearts got submerged, and the description is, in the mud of fearfulness. So it's like very messy, the fearfulness. And they all had had numerous experiences of Krishna's majesty, because they'd seen him wiping out various demons. So they had experiences of his majesty. And each time he would always emerge completely unscathed, as though nothing had transpired. It might have been a 12-mile-long demon such as Putana. It may have been a huge cart demon where he was under the cart, but always he emerged completely unscathed. So they had experience of his majesty. But of course, there's that covering potency of yoga maya. So the only thing that they're aware of is that sweet intimacy, that connection with the heart of Krishna. So all that their thoughtfulness was concerned with in their lamentation, because they saw that, you know, there's this terrible hostile atmosphere, all their concern was with the safety of Krishna. So this is described in Ananda Vrindavan Champu. And in fact, just to look at what these omens were that were creating this hostile atmosphere. So again, from Ananda Vrindavan Champu. Three types of fearful omens, namely those on the earth, in the sky, and in the bodies of living creatures, which announced imminent danger, descended upon Vrindavan at that moment. So here they are. Jackals shrieked harshly at the sun. So normally you hear that, you know, those creatures howl at moonrise or something. But here they are shrieking harshly at the sun. So unusual behavior. It's the opposite time of the day. Smoke and dust as dark as the horn of buffaloes blanketed the sky. So this is daytime, and suddenly there's smoke and dust. So the entire sky becomes dark. And even the sun begins to look very dull and lackluster, like it's losing its life. So this is, you know, very disturbing, because the sun is the source of life. And high winds howled in every direction. And violent earthquakes shook the earth. So imagine, you know, these gritty particles, darkness, sound of huge winds, the shaking of the earth, so there's tremor beneath one's feet. I mean, it's pretty hostile environment. And the effect on the people from just being in that hostile environment, and it says that these signs are inauspicious. In men, the left side of the body, it started getting afflicted. So it would be the hand, the left eye, and the left thigh. And for women, the right side of the body began to tremble. I've only had one experience personally of like disturbance. Again, you know, it's part of my personal experience and my place of origin, because that's what gets imprinted on one's own mind. The city that I'm from is built on some sort of vein of gold. So because of that, there's been extensive mining that's been done. So every now and again, the entire city shakes, because naturally there's so much hollow earth because of all this huge mining. And in fact, when you look at the city, there's the earth that was taken is put into these square little mountains, and then this very harsh grass grows from it. So all around the city are these mountains from earth that's been dislodged. So in growing up, every now and again, everything would shake, like quite a bit, and one would think, oh, you know, it's going to fall, the whole city is going to fall, and one visualizes even the tall buildings coming down, because really it shakes. So in my, I can't say that I experience the trembling, but certainly there's a fearful mood that comes upon one. Now, a whole atmosphere of anxiety seized and disturbed everyone's mind. And what they were started to experience, notice, it's grief, because the foremost thought is the safety of Krishna. So there's grief because there's the thought that Krishna may have died, even all these omens that is in affecting the entire earth must indicate that Krishna has passed away. So of course, how can this be? It's clearly not logical. So this kind of grief that's there on the part of the gopis, so remember the bodies are trembling on the right side, they express their thoughts in this kind of way. Oh, how dreadful. Due to negligence, so remember it's very thoughtful, even in this disturbing atmosphere. Due to negligence and naivety, our innocent Krishna has wandered alone into the dense forest, which is infested with various demons that always bring calamities. And he has gone there without the company of his intelligent, powerful elder brother Balaram. Without our beloved Krishna, we cannot live. But since we cannot fathom the actual situation from here, let us invoke good fortune by chanting Shiva, Shiva. So these are the gopis. So in their apprehensiveness, so remember apprehensiveness, it's indicating ecstatic emotion, that heart connection with Krishna. They took shelter of something which provides safety. So, let's chant the name of a demigod. Shiva, Shiva. So their observation of the omens was different from that of the other residents of Vrindavan, who thought Krishna had died. And it's interesting, because the words that were used in 13 through 15, the Sanskrit, and this is coming from Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Nitanam Matva. It actually translates into a great treasure. So they're trying to say that Krishna must have passed away. But actually, how it comes across is that he got a great treasure, the words they use. So the correct words are coming out of their mouth, because actually, he did get a great treasure. Krishna's treasure was that he got a chance to joyfully sport in the Yamuna. And however, the residents of Vrindavan, they were overwhelmed with fear and unhappiness, because, you know, there's that concern for safety of Krishna. So this is their ecstatic love for Krishna. There's this intense emotion that gets caused by something very devastating. So usually, and this is described in Nectar of Devotion, this intense emotion of fearfulness, unhappiness. The examples are given, it gets aroused by something like a great fire or a strong wind or some natural disturbance. Well, over here, there was everything, the strong wind, the natural disturbance, the tremor of the earth, the whole dislodging of the natural course of events, that, you know, jackals are howling at the sun instead of the moon, so everything at the wrong time. So this kind of disturbance, because of that ecstatic heart connection with Krishna, at least on the part of the gopis, it produced loud cries. Oh, how dreadful. Oh, how dreadful. And Shiva, Shiva. And on the part of the residents of Vrindavan, there's just this thought, Krishna must have died. It's like just sinking into like great fear. So, of course, how can God die? It's not logical. Now, these bodily symptoms, which express this overwhelming, ecstatic, internal love, we've looked at two of them, you could say, all of them indicate this furthest reaches of worship of Lord Krishna, this internal worship, which culminates in that these residents of Vrindavan, the gopis, they're actually the heart and soul of Krishna, and Krishna is their heart and soul. So in actual fact, the two are intertwined. So this is what emerged from these verses. If there's any thought on this very esoteric subject matter,
Hare Krishna Mataji, thank you for your class. You always make wonderful points. Regarding the lion story, this is a kind of side note, but I'll just briefly share it. You said it was a lion who was coming to attack you when you were at your car, I believe. Sometimes human animals are even scarier. This is a true story in the year 2000. In Ethiopia, basically, sometimes they kidnap young girls to get them married when they're young. So this is precisely what happened somewhere in the year 2000. Some dacoits stole, kidnapped a girl. She was like 11 or 12 years old. And they were going to marry her young or whatever. And so three lions actually rescued her, and they protected her for 2 or 3 days until the police came. And sometimes we hear Nisshinga Day's story and we think, oh, is that real? But there's a lot of miracle stories like that, so I just wanted to share that. Well, you can look it up online too. So.
Well, thank you very much.
You were mentioning external worship and internal worship. My comment and question regarding that, maybe you could expand on it. One of my favorite points, I kind of bring up all the time to keep in mind, you reminded me of it again. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the demons in Vrindavan are compared to the anarchists within our hearts. I don't remember what Kaliya stands for, but one thing I appreciated about that is that when criminals escape from prison, they cause havoc for all of human society. So we also have anarchists, criminals in our heart, and when our anarchists escape through our words and actions, they cause havoc for us and potentially for others. And we see that the government subdues criminals with security guards. And we're taught that we should subdue our anarthas with the good qualities. Yasyasi Bhaktir Bhagavati Akinshana. We subdue pride with humility, envy with appreciation, and attitude with gratitude. And so there's one of my favorite verses in the Bible, in the book of James, chapter 3. It's a really profound quote. It says, "All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and sea creatures are being tamed and have been tamed by mankind, but no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil, full of deadly poison. With the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth come praise and cursing." My dear brothers and sisters, this should not be. And so my question is regarding, sometimes it may be easy, like you said, regarding the internal, external worship point, it may be easy to subdue our words, but we see it's not so easy to subdue our mind. There's a nice quote that says, "Watch your thoughts, they become words. Watch your words, they become actions. Watch your actions, it becomes your habit. Watch your habit, it becomes your character. Watch your character, it becomes your destiny." And so my last point, and maybe you could expand on it, one of my favorite pastimes regarding this is, unfortunately I don't remember the exact quote, but this is from the Chaitanya Bhagavat, where Lord Chaitanya, Mukunda Datta, and a few other Vaishnavas are glorifying a rich Vaishnava named Pundarik Vidyanidhi. He was visiting Mayapur, and Mukunda Datta told Gadadhar Prabhu, he says, "Would you like to meet a great Vaishnava?" And Gadadhar, he was very renounced, and he had a preconceived notion of what a Vaishnava looks like. So he's like, "Absolutely." So when he came to the house of Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he saw that Pundarik Vidyanidhi had a silk couch. He had exquisite clothes. He had jewelry all over him. And so Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he was a very humble Vaishnava. He glorified Gadadhar when he first saw him. He told Mukunda Datta, "Wow, this devotee is very effulgent. You know, where does he come from?" He was kind of appreciating Gadadhar. And the ironic thing is that although Pundarik Vidyanidhi was appreciating him, Gadadhar Pandit didn't appreciate him. He saw that Gadadhar was chewing betel nuts, and he had two servants fanning him. So long story short, there's a quote that says, "The face is the index of the mind." Generally speaking, we can know what somebody is thinking by what their expression was. So Mukunda Datta, he saw that Gadadhar Pandit, he didn't appreciate the presence of Pundarik as a great Vaishnava. He saw that his face was very retorted, and he had this mental offense. And so he wanted to prove to Gadadhar Pandit that Pundarik Vidyanidhi was a great Vaishnava. So he quoted two verses from the Bhagavatam expressing Krishna's mercy on Putana. And when Gadadhar Pandit heard this verse, he became so enlivened in ecstatic Krishna Prima that he literally started ripping off his clothes, breaking all his dishes, breaking all his of furniture in ecstatic Krishna Prima. Usually when we get a stain on our silk garments, we take it to the cleaners and we become very infuriated. So the point is that when Gadadhar Pandit saw Pundarik Vidyanidhi's Krishna Prima, he was like, I made only a mental offense. And he apologized. He was like, "In order for me to rectify this offense, Mukunda Datta, I want to take initiation from Pundarik Vidyanidhi." So my question is that, like I said, what are some steps we could take to move forward, to develop, to take serious more of our internal worship? And how are we treating others in body, mind, and words? Archayam eva hadaye pujam ya shadaye hate. Nata bhateshu chanyeshu sa bhakta prakita shrimitaha. Prabhupada quotes this verse from the 11th canto of chapter 2, verse 47 of the Bhagavatam and the Nectar of Instruction, text 5. This verse says, "You may engage in deity worship, but as long as you don't know how to treat the devotees properly, bhakteshu, or other living entities, anyeshu, then you're considered a prakita bhakta, materialist devotee." So that's my question. How can we take this, our internal worship, very seriously before it leads to a very unfavorable destination, as we see throughout the scriptures and other living entities? Thank you.
So, Jai Baladev, you have given an example of Pundarik in Chaitanya Charitamrita to highlight this point that is intertwined in your question of not having mental offenses, because this obviously hampers internal worship in some way. So your question is how to not go down this road of mental offenses. Although right in the beginning, you said a few things yourself of, I think you used the words that one, instead of having an attitude, one has gratitude, etc. So, yeah. Well, you have the extreme case of, you know, serpent, which is Kaliya, having malice, actual malice towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And maybe in one's own case, one finds, you know, malice emerging towards others that are around one. So, you know, just like you were quoting a biblical quote, that one needs to recognize that the persons around one are also spirit souls that are attempting to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then one has to check very carefully if malice is coming from one. Generally, the safest route is to examine one's own heart, because if something is emerging towards someone else, it means that one isn't accepting some fault, some difficulty, something in one's own heart. So then one examines more carefully what the cause of the malice is. So it may appear that, oh, it's that somebody has done one wrong, or it may be that somebody has something that one doesn't have, you know, it takes different forms. So one needs to pinpoint it, what it is. So if it's a case of being wronged in some way, then, well, that's an interesting thing, because it's natural to feel a little dishonored sometimes. So one may not be actively seeking honor, but being dishonored can be painful. And so one just gives oneself encouragement and sees if it's possible to, well, not sees, but one continues with the service one is doing, or the way in which one is serving Krishna. My spiritual master puts it that one always invests in the spiritual. So you invest in your service, because that's the source of strength. The connection with Krishna is the source of strength. So if you've pinpointed what your personal difficulty is in the heart, having been dishonored or whatever it is, I'm taking that because that's an easy one, then one increases with fervor one's service to Lord Krishna. Like much more intensifies it, because that's a source of strength. And then one can see more objectively both one's own difficulty and why it is that one's projecting it outward. One can accept that difficulty. It's easier to accept it then, because that's the hardest thing. People have the hardest time to accept their own faults, their own errors. I mean, that idea of lamentation, that people can go through lamenting because they're feeling guilty. So the guilt stops the minute you say, okay, I accept I actually made that mistake. I mean, the guilt is there because one doesn't want to really look at it. You know there's something wrong, but you don't really look at it. So you just look at it. And the ability to look at these internal things comes from the strength of the connection with Krishna. So one invests in one's service even more. Because the tendency is when one hits that is to turn one's attention to the external projection and think the fault lies outside of one. It never does. It's always internal. And it's not always a fault. It's just that one needs to become aware of you know, what it is that causes one disturbance or difficulty, and then one increases in one's fervor in performing service for Krishna, because that's the source of strength. I repeat it three times because I've learned this through trial and error. So, yeah, so that's a response.
Hare Krishna Mataji, thank you for the class. Please correct me if I'm wrong. What I can understand and kind of like realize that when we read and know more about Krishna and internalize it and take ownership of his words in Prabhupada's teachings and Lord Chaitanya's and the Vedas and everything, and our relationship with the people externally, our worship, internal worship, is going to be projected into deeds according to the progress that we do. And in the same way, that or those deeds, deeds and things deeds. That we do, deeds, D-E-E-D-S, retrofeed also our spiritual and internal worship. Is how I understand it. Is how I kind of like I realize our relationship with the external worshiping and internal worshiping to Krishna. That is a retrofitting between those two projections in our devotional life. Am I clear?
I think you're looking at internal and external
as a body,
as something that's going on in one's devotional life. And you could say that, but actually, I think I was going through a more refined definition of internal and external. That internal has to do with getting closer in one's relationship with Krishna and his devotees, and external is that, and one is understanding that one's functioning on the level of the soul, on the level. So it's from the heart. Yeah. Whereas the external worship is, one does worship, but it's not necessarily from the heart. There may be some gratitude, there may be a sense of duty, but it's still being pretty distant from God and his devotees. Pretty distant. So that's, I was looking at a different definition of internal and external worship. So the internal worship, it just means staying on that, on the Bhakti Yoga path, which is calling for, indeed, as you put it, the deeds being performed that are for the pleasure of Krishna and his devotees. That's where one puts one's energy, the deeds that are for the pleasure of Krishna and his devotees. And one doesn't put energy into what seems like external disturbance.
Actually, we don't have to put our energy. The energy comes from Krishna.
That's
We're
right.
so energized.
That's right. That,
no,
that's the
that
correct understanding.
Immediately we react towards what is surrounding us.
Yes, and because you're acting in that way, it becomes very clear even what a course of action should be when a difficulty arises. And always, it's not external, it's internal. It's internal because the cause of the difficulty may be in the heart, because one's going through that purification process. One may be carrying that malice of Kaliya. So one has to rather direct the energy inward, and inward means also thinking, how can one serve more Krishna? Because that brings resolution to the difficulty. It starts to fall away. The cleansing happens. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.